I think it was good that our brother Ray reminded us of what the typology of Canaan is for the Christian today. It is amazing how many mature believers do not see that. And possibly one reason why they do not see it is, in much of our hymnology, Canaan is referred to as the place to which we're going, heaven. Even we speak of Emmanuel's land, and it has caused certain confusion in the minds of the Christian, but he said rightly so that the land was possessed by enemies and they had to be driven out. You wouldn't need any other reference than that, would you? And again, Israel never did any fighting until they got there. And thank God, all the fighting we'll ever do will be down here. It will be peace, thank God, up there. However, there is confusion, too, in the minds of the Christian, because they read in their Bible about Israel being in Egypt. And then they read about them being in the wilderness. And then they read about them being in Canaan. And how can you reconcile all three? And to help you, maybe, I would say this. If you think of the wilderness, that's the world, or Egypt, that's the world once I knew. If you think of the wilderness, that's the world that now I know. And if you think of Canaan, in that world there is a sphere. It's a heavenly sphere, and there by faith we dwell until we reach heaven itself. Now, there are many figures used in our Bible to describe the Christian, and our brother has made us think of one. Travelers in the wilderness. There are children in the Word of God in a family. There are soldiers in a battle. There are stones in a house. There are sheep in a flock. I want to talk to you for a little while about runners in a race. The Christian life as a race. Now, to conserve time, I think we'll confine our reading to one passage. We likely will make reference to others. Turn to the first epistle to the Corinthians, chapter 9, and we'll read the closing verses of that chapter. 1 Corinthians, chapter 9, and verse 24. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. Now, I don't know whether we'll get around all the thoughts that may crowd into one's mind, but I would like to break up the message for you like this. First of all, we want to talk about the character of the race. I'd like to say something about the course that we have to run. I'd like to say something about the contestants in the race with us, maybe say something about the crown, and perhaps a hint at the castaway. However, we'll see how well we get along, and we never have to finish something that we've thought about. If we leave some thoughts in the minds of the Lord's people that they can get, it's really immaterial that we get to the end of our cogitation alone in the presence of God. I think we would keep that in mind. You know, there are different races, and Paul here, apparently, he betrays more than other here, more in other places as well as this, a knowledge of what was going on in the world of, well, we would say the world of sport today. He might possibly, as a younger man, maybe was identified with it? I do not know, but he did know things that I think were a help to him to illustrate the Christian life. So I don't know what form of races they did have in those days. I know they had torch races, but we do not have them today. But as a boy, I was fond of running. And maybe my thoughts of ministry on this subject are a throwback to my days when I was a youngster and as thin as a rake, and running was an enjoyment of mine. And I've known what it is to run in a sprint and to run in a long distance or a marathon, to run in an obstacle race and to run in a relay race. And I think all those races could be used to illustrate the Christian life. We needn't spend time on the sprint, but there are some, and that's the way they ran the race. They weren't saved very long till the Lord took them home, but I think we could say of some we knew, they finished their course. And then there are others, and it's a long distance race. It seems they run and run and run and run, and one generation after another passes, and then they can turn around and say, and here I ought to be careful, because when I talk about knowing five generations of a family, that's getting pretty well along the line, isn't it? But it's true just the same, believe it or not. Some of us have been running in this race now for over 50 years. And, you know, you don't like to talk about it, but it's true just the same. A big idea is whether our race is a short one or whether it be a long one, we'd all like to be able to say, I finished my course. And then you can appreciate it's an obstacle race. Paul wrote to the Galatians and he said, you did run well. Who did hinder you? Who did hinder you? One would like to be tender right now, because I could likely have some under the ministry at this time, and deep down in your heart you would say, that's a word for me. That's a word for me. Once I used to give out gospel tracts. I don't do it anymore. Once I used to teach a Sunday school, but I've given that up. Once I used to do a little bit of visiting the sick, but not anymore. I needn't enlarge, need I? For I might miss even no matter how many phases I cover. But it would be good and healthy, beloved saints, if we all could say today, am I going on for the Lord today like once I did? You did run well. Who did hinder you? You know, there would be various ways to be hindered, wouldn't there? And I'm not going to try and cover them, it's not in my mind, but one is crossing my pathway just at this moment, and one could be discouragement. You were discouraged. You didn't get much help. You didn't get much encouragement. And you know one thing about a race, and I don't know if it's just as true in every phase of sport, but this is true about a race. I remember when we ran the marathon that I'm thinking of, it was a school race, and we were running as a team of 8 boys against 56 boys representing 8 sections of the school altogether. And I remember around the course, we had 25 in our section, from which 8 of us were chosen to run, and they were around the course, and when we'd go flashing by as fast as we could, keep it up, Davy, keep it up, or keep on running, go it, go it, and little words that they would say as we were running around, and do you know, it did something for us, it helped us in the race. Years ago, this is changing the metaphor, but the principle is the same. Years ago in London, when the fireman was a man that had a ladder always at his hand, and when a call for a fire came, he rushed with his ladder to the scene, and it was usually a house on fire, and this man, he had gone up his ladder, I think, 5 times and brought down someone from the building, from that particular room. But when he brought the 5th one down, he was exhausted, and he slumped against his ladder. And all of a sudden, there was a scream, and another person appeared at the window, and someone said, Joe, do it again. He says, I can't. Oh, Oh, try and do it. And the dear fellow did his best. He climbed up the ladder just halfway. And when he reached halfway, he slumped once more right over the ladder rungs. And there he hung. And a deadly silence fell on the crowd below. But finally, someone shouted, "Give him a cheer." And everyone in the crowd let go with a cheer. And it did something for Joe, the fireman. He was able to go the rest of the steps, get hold of the man and get him on his back. And he brought him down. I wouldn't like to think at the judgment seat of Christ that anyone will ever have to say to me, Lord, to the Lord, "Yes, Lord, I'll agree, I did run well, but David Kirk hindered me." You did run well. Who did hinder you? But the phase of the race that I think maybe interests me most is the relay race. I suppose you all understand a relay race. In England, in the year 1935, there was a king called George V. He celebrated his silver anniversary on the throne. And there's an organization in the old country called the Boys Brigade. Now, you have nothing like it that I've met over here. It's just not the same at all. But it's a very fine, or was a very fine, Christian, supposedly, organization. The boys were taught to go to Bible class every Sunday, and it was more religious than it was anything else. And the organization decided that they would like to send congratulations from every remote point of the island to the king. And in order to do that, they had to have boys running. And each boy would run so many miles and stop. And then so many miles and stop. But at every stopping point, there was a fresh boy waiting. And he took from his hand a little cylinder which contained the congratulations of the organization from that quarter from which the first boy ran. And finally, it was arranged that two or three or four boys were to meet together simultaneously and to run through the big gates of the palace as they were open to receive the boys, and keep on running right through the doors of the palace into the presence of the king. And the thought that is precious to me is that we're in a relay race. And some of the best men and women that ever lived in this world have been in that race. One might think of the apostles, one may think of the runners before them, men like Abraham, men like Job, men like Daniel, and women we might mention as well. They're gone, and a new age came in with the apostles, and they're gone, and the martyr age came in, and then Martin Luther represents another phase of the race, and last century there was another phase again, and today, and it very well could be we're in the last lap of the race. And it may be our inestimable joy and privilege to run, as it were, the last lap of the race right in to the presence of the King. May the Lord keep us running in the race. Now, it's a difficult course. For the first thing is, it's in an enemy's land. It's in an enemy's land. I do not follow sport, but I do know this, that sometimes a team has to go and play a game in another country. Maybe you do not have it over here like they have on the other side, but there are four kingdoms: England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales. And sometimes it's cricket, sometimes it's soccer, and sometimes it's rugby, which you call football. And England will play Wales, and Ireland will play Scotland down through the year, and then comes the final. And when it's the, shall we say, the English team going to play the Irish team, hundreds of them leave England's shores with their team to come to the bleacher stand and try and cheer for their crowd. And then sometimes a contingent will leave the shores of Britain representing the British Isles, and they cross the USSR. And I'm telling you, 1,000 times would they rather play on home base They'd rather play on the home ground. So there's no encouragement from those stony-faced communists as they watch the Britishers chase that ball up and down the field. They will be playing in a hostile scene. And so, brethren and sisters, in this race, it's set in a hostile scene. And do I need to remind you, there's nothing that will encourage you on in the race from the world around you. But another thing, it's my course, not your course. Sometimes we had to run, and we had to run between chalk lines. This would be a sprint. And we weren't allowed to leave that course we were in and step into another course. Paul's course is not mine, and my course is not yours, but irrespective of whatever course it may be I'm running in, may it be that we'll finish our course with joy. Now, here is a phase of the race that I don't think I have too many to support me in, but they can't contradict me, so I keep going on in this phase of interpretation. In fact, one of our very well-known speakers, one of the top-notchers when it comes to exposition of the Word of God, and a man that I don't think I ever heard a minister, but I was blessed through his ministry. He shared a conference with me not too long ago in Houston, Texas. And he spoke on this passage. He referred to it in another sense. And he said nothing about these words, "Know ye not that they which run in a race run all but one?" One receiveth a prize. He never touched that. He left that absolutely alone. So after the meeting that afternoon, I called him by his name and I said, "Who's Paul running against?" "Oh," he said, "not running against anybody." "Well," I said, "it seems to me he is. For he says, one runs and gets the prize, and only one. And he says, so run that you may obtain." I says, "Doesn't the secret lie in the last verse? I keep under my body, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." I says, "Don't you think it's Paul versus Saul, or Saul versus Paul? Don't you think it's Paul here speaking of the old nature within him, I keep under my body? If I were to give in to the old man, then I would be out of the running in the race." Now we have a contestant. He didn't see that, and of course I didn't try to force it on him. But anyway, I think to myself, you'll have to give me some explanation of the words, "Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth a prize?" Now that's not true of you and I as runners in the race. It won't be at the judgment seat of Christ. The Lord will look over the number of the speakers who were present at the conference in Atlantic Lyman in 1967 and say, "This one is the winner." There's no preacher running against another preacher. He won't look over the missionaries who've gone to Africa in a certain era and say, "And this one is the outstanding missionary. He's the one that wins the race." We're not running against one another. One receiveth the prize. Yes, that's true. But there is a prize for everyone. There is a reward. There is a crown for every saint who will run in the race. Then what can it mean? Well, you know this in a race. If you're well to the front, you have nothing to worry about the front. It's what's behind. Isn't that right? It's what's behind. So the Apostle Paul says, forgetting those things which are behind. And the other night I was studying this, and I was telling my brother Crawford, I've got to the point now when I forget what I've written down. I said, forget the things I've learned. And I said, did I ever write that? That's my writing. I don't remember it. It's a bad business, but I'm glad I did write it down. You know, some folks say, how do you keep your memory? I have one of the worst memories you ever came across. One of the worst memories. But I'll tell you what I do. I never get a good thought, but I make a prisoner of it. And you put it down in writing. "I enjoyed that thought, brother. That was a good thought you gave. Did you write it down?" "Well, no. We'll not know it this time next week." You see what I mean? If you write it down, sure. And
you can use it any time. So I had written this down about things that are seen, things that are not seen, things that are before, things that are behind. I'm getting my gestures turned around. Things that are behind and things that are before. And then, what's the other one? Things that are seen, things that are not seen, things that are before and things that are behind. And there's a third one. Thank you, my beloved brother. There are those things which are temporal and those which are spiritual. Now, I think without taking time to develop them, you can appreciate that. But here, what's behind me? That's the world. What's behind me? That's the flesh. What's right behind me? There's the devil. And now, the point is that they're not going to win the crown. They're not going to win the race, but they're going to stop me from winning that race. Is it an enemy infernal, the devil? Is it an enemy that is internal, the flesh? Is it an enemy that's external, the world? Beloved young Christian, mind you, I'm going to tell you right now, you should listen to this. You should listen to that. You don't mind it much now. But oh, what a red face at the judgment seat of Christ. There'll be no red face at the judgment seat of Christ. Don't talk too quickly. Don't talk too quickly. I read about tears. John in the glory in chapter 5 wept much. John in the glory wept much when he found no one could open the book. That you be not ashamed when he comes. In other words, you be confident living your life in such a way that you won't be ashamed at his coming. Don't switch it out of it too easily like that. I believe, young folks, if you would listen today to this message, it could be a help to you in your Christian life. Remember, if you can become lackadaisical, if you settle down on your knees, if you begin to take it easy, remember there's the danger of falling out of the race altogether. And what Paul is concerned here about is possibly what would mostly concern any of us. I would like to say this, and hope it's true, that most of you are not interested in the world. Now, there's a passing interest. You can glance at a newspaper and read something there, or there's some program on TV that you might like to see. I wouldn't be a crank at all, but really, you're not longing for the things of the world. Oh, it's true there are some individual Christians, professedly anyway, but by and large, as I rub shoulders with my brethren and sisters, the very fact you're all here this afternoon on a fine summer day, calling it that, you could be anywhere and everywhere, but you're here under the ministry of the word, so there must be something in your heart responds to the Spirit of God. I would like to say then that it's not so much the world, nor is it the devil. Somehow or other, we have a faith that the Lord strengthens us in day by day. And as we were saying last night and reminded again today, we can at times, though trembling and with tear-filled eyes, say, we cannot, Lord, thy purpose see, but all is well that's done by thee. But it's self. It's, oh, beloved saint of God, you know what I'm talking about. There's something within me, and it may be nice, it may be something that I wouldn't be rejected for in the best society in the world, but still it's the flesh. And the dear Apostle Paul says, I keep it under, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. Before I speak about the crown, then, I might just say, lest I be a castaway, the word here simply means disapproved. It's the negative form of the word approved, and just simply means disapproved or rejected. Maybe some of you sisters are fond of English China. I don't know how you feel out here in the West, but around the eastern parts, nearly all the sisters that I ever met love nice English china. And sometimes they get a set, 8, 12 pieces maybe, set for 12 or 10 or 8, whatever it might be, and then one day one of them gets cracked. Oh, well, it's just a crack. Well, throw it out. No. Well, you can't, and sisters, you should never put a cracked cup on the table, especially in company, should you? You know that much, don't you? But you don't like to put it on the table. Well, then throw it out. But I just don't like to throw it out. Well, what are you going to do with it? Well, I'll put it in the china cabinet, and I'll put it at the back. Where likely I'll never use it anyway. But just looking at it, 3 and 3 and 3, there are 9, or 2 and 2 and 4, or there's a set, it's complete. Now, it's all right, it's complete, but you're not going to use it. It's just set to the one side. Now, this is what the Apostle Paul, he didn't know anything about China, I suppose, but this is what he would have endorsed, I believe, this afternoon. Set to the one side, no longer being used. One occasion, we had a trip across the continent from Toronto to Vancouver. In those days, it took 4 nights and 3 full days. And I remember every station we came where the train stopped for to give us a walk of 20 minutes, there was 2 soldiers on board. 2. They were Canadian soldiers. Now, one of them was a sergeant. That was evident. Didn't have to ask any questions. Now, what was the rank of the other one? Well, you couldn't tell. Except this, you knew by the uniform he was an officer. You could tell the texture of his clothing was much smoother than the rough clothing of the soldier who was the sergeant. But he had nothing on his shoulders, and nothing on the buttons, and nothing on the sleeves, just a khaki jacket and a pants. You could just guess at what he might be. But we found out he was an officer. And he had been with the Canadian Army in Germany. And he did something. And being he was court-martialed for it, he was sent back to Vancouver in charge of this soldier. And the story is he had been cashiered. And the Army said, "We'll not shoot you. We'll not put you in prison. But we don't want you, and we'll send you home." Now, I never think of this verse, but I think of the cashiered soldier. He had been set to the one side, no longer usable. Would that be far-fetched? Could it be possible that that might be applied to us today in the Christian life? Well, seeing is believing, isn't it? Oh, the world says that, but it's true in certain respects. It's seeing is believing. The faith says believing is seeing, but that's beside the point. Yes, it's the soul. Yes, it's so. I was brought up as a lad in an assembly, away from the Lord for 3 years of my life. That is, I was forced to go to meetings. My mother saw through that, but I wasn't heart away from God. But at 17 years of age, after being away from the Lord in the world, although at the meetings, but still in heart away from the Lord, I was brought back. I remember when I got back, I only started to live, although I'd been saved several years, I only started to live the Christian life as a lad of 17 after being restored to the Lord. And it was my ambition to preach. My ambition to preach. We had in our assembly a fine band of young men around my own age at the time, some of them a little older, and they all could preach but one of them, and at least he could make the announcements. I was the only one of the band and I could do nothing. So I decided, Lord, I'll preach, but I could never get to that point when I could step into the ring and hold my hat in my hand and do a little shout. And I said to the Lord one day, "If only you'd take me by the nape of the neck and push me out there, I'd do my best." But the Lord taught me he wouldn't want to force me into anything like that. It would have to be an exercise of my own free will. And so one night I said I couldn't last very long. Let me test myself. What would I like to preach on? The best story in the Bible to me was the story of the woman that touched the hem of his garment, for I was saved through that story. So one night I sat down and looked into the fire all alone, and I got my inspiration, I suppose, from the fire and the bright coals, checked myself with a clock, and believe it or not, it took me an hour to preach my little story of the woman that touched the hem of his garment. And one night we were having an open air meeting. Can't I remember it so well? St. Patrick's Day of that year. And all of a sudden, I don't know how it happened, there I was, right in the middle of the ring, and I was preaching for all I was worth. But I don't think I was 4 minutes from the ring until I was back in my place again. But I want to tell you something. My heart was bubbling up with joy. I've done it. And one brother said to me, two of them, in fact, two of the boys, a little older than I am, they came, put their arms around me, and they says, "Davy, you got your mouth opened at last. Now, only the devil can close it." You know what I want to tell you? One of those young men, who was the means of starting me in the pathway by asking me would I go in open meetings for him when we were young fellows in our late teens. I never saw him after I left the old country in 1931 until 1948, 17 years later. And I was having gospel meetings in my home assembly. And I brought this young man, he wasn't so young then, to the meeting one night, if he would tell the story of how God saved him. And he said on the platform that night, "I'm awfully happy to be here tonight on this platform." And he called me just by my first name. He called me Davy. "But he said, I'll tell you why," he said. "You know, Davy and I used to preach together quite a bit when we were boys." And he says, "If I do say it, I think I'm safe in saying I could preach as well as he could preach." And I had to shout out, to be honest, "And you could preach a lot better." For that was true. He was a delightful young preacher of the gospel. But you know what he said after that? He patted me on the shoulder in front of everybody. And he said, "But this disciple did outrun Peter." Oh, what does he mean? I didn't know, but I found out. He was slipping. It wasn't long until it was public. He was out of the running altogether. I was there 2 years ago, and the phone rang one night in my home where I was, and a brother in the Lord says, "David, did you hear the news about Bob Foster?" "No," I said, "what's the news?" He says, "Bob's been terribly injured. His car has been in an accident, rolled over several times, and he's lying in the hospital in Lisburn, and he's calling for you." For me? Calling for me? I couldn't understand it. I hadn't seen him since 48, and now this is 1965. 17 years later again. So I found my way to the hospital, and this brother said to me, "I'd like to tell you this, David. I believe the Lord's speaking to him. I believe Bob is going to be restored." And so I went to his room, and I thought to myself, I'm going to tell him what I enjoyed about him. I'm going to tell him my appreciation. And I stood by his bedside. He was sleeping. But I whispered his name. And when I whispered his name, Bob, he opened his eyes. He says, "Oh, Davy, haven't seen me for 17 years. And he says, "Oh, Davy, I'm glad to see you." I says, "Bob, you're in bad shape." He says, "I don't know why I wasn't killed. I should have been killed," he says. "I should have been killed." He says, The life I've been living. He says, "I killed my brother. I killed my boy." He didn't. Now, in the sense in which you might think, he didn't do that. But he had a twin brother, and he believed his life away from God so broke the heart of his brother, and so broke the heart of his young 21-year-old old son, that he believed the Lord took them home because of his bad living. And oh, the remorse of that fellow as he said, I killed my brother. I killed my son. I says, "Bob, I don't want to talk to you about that, but will you let me say something to you? You know, I appreciate you, Bob. You appreciate me." Well, I said, "Thinking of the past, remember when you took me out to preach with you?" And I said, "You know, Bob, the Lord has been speaking to you." And he says, "It's possible you may be restored again to the point where you and I could do a little preaching again." "Me preach," he said, "me preach." Oh, he said, "I'd never ask anybody to listen to me preach. Never, never, never ask anybody to listen to me preach. He said, do you know, Davy, what I want? If the Lord will restore me and the brethren would let me, I'd like to crawl in on my hands and feet and sit in the back seat in the hall and watch them break bread. Well, he said, I went to see his wife. He asked me to go and see her. Poor soul, she stood reliably by him. And the nice thing is, brethren and sisters, that God has restored him. And 6 months after coming back to the assembly, the brethren felt after 6 months there was a sincerity about it, and he has been received in. But the bird with a broken pinion ne'er soars so high again. I keep under my body, lest what I have preached to others, I myself should be a cast away. Now, in closing my message, just let me say this. There are four crowns in Scripture. Now, strictly speaking, you might say there are five. There's the crown of glory, the crown of rejoicing, the crown of righteousness, and the crown of life. Those are the four. Now, the crown of life is for the sufferer or the martyr. The crown of glory is for the shepherd. The crown of rejoicing is for the soul winner. And the crown of righteousness, it's for the separatist, the man that walks apart from this world, living for the age that is to come. And what about number five? Well, number five is the incorruptible, and I submit, beloved brethren and sisters, number five describes all the four. Do you think for a moment the crown of rejoicing is a corruptible crown or any of the others? Nay, verily. They are all incorruptible. And the incorruptible crown of the race, and still the soul winner, the sufferer, the separatist, and the shepherd, we're all in the race. And thank God for each of us at the end of the journey, the end of the race, there can be the crown. But in closing, let me ask this question, and you see if you can answer it in your heart. I wonder why they're designated as they are. Why should the crown of life be for the sufferer? I tell you right now, the martyrs didn't get much of this life. The sufferer doesn't shut in, as I've known some dear sufferers. God will compensate. They suffered patiently the crown of life. What about the separatist life? Oh, Paul, you big fool. You big fool. Endowed with the abilities that you had, so much so that in the matter of languages, you could go to Athens. And among the great teachers of the Greek language of that day, you could minister and have them sit at your feet. And then to think and throw it all up, simply to be an evangelist, and then have your blood spurt from your headless body by the X-Men's sword. Oh, Paul, you missed it. You made a wrong choice. He says, the crown of righteousness. At the judgment seat of Christ, it will be shown I was right to lose the world for Christ. What about the crown of rejoicing? Well, if you're going to be a soul winner, you're going to know travel. But thank God, if you know travel, praise His name, you're going to know joy. Then what about the crown of glory? Well, brethren, I want to say something to you who try to care for little flocks of God in this world. You're going to get no glory. Now, don't look for it. Some of you may, and I hope you don't, be like one of the men of my home assembly years ago. So the brethren asked him if he would come in and take oversight with them. On one occasion shortly afterwards, he was sitting in a home with his wife and some folks at their table. He put his arm round his shoulder and said, how do you like being the wife of an elder? It was a position that he coveted, a position he got, and needless to tell you, a position he didn't keep. There's no joy, there's no glory in it. Letters of interest? Words in season? Used to be Light and Liberty? I don't read the elders' names there. Oh yes, my name's there. Some of these brethren's names are there. We get plenty of glory. Oh, we were here and we were there. We said this and we said that, and from there it is. What about the elders? No glory. No glory. No glory. No glory down here. And brethren, I don't like to hurt your feelings, but if you're looking for it, you're going to be terribly disappointed. But oh, in that day, caring for the sheep he bled for. Caring for the sheep he bled for. Caring for something he purchased with his own precious blood. I tell you, there'll be glory in that day. Years ago, there was a servant of Christ, and he was a missionary in Africa, and he came back to USA. The boat pulled in at New York. And on board that boat was a man called Roosevelt. Not Franklin, but Theodore. He had resigned, he had left the office of president in the early years of the century, and the first thing he did after he left was to go to Africa for 2 years. He was a big game hunter. And he spent 2 years in Africa. And when he returned to New York, the bands were down to welcome the ex-president, and what a fanfare. The bands played and the flags waved and everybody shouted and sang, for he's a jolly good fellow. And this dear brother, leaning on the gunwale of the ship, he looked at the whole thing and he says, Lord, it doesn't seem right. I've spent my life for thee in Africa. And here's this man, he spent 2 years. I've sought to serve thee, Lord, to win souls and care for their bodies. He was Dr. Morrison. And this man, all he was interested in was big game. Lord, it doesn't seem right. And a voice whispered in his ear, my child Henry, don't forget, you're not home yet. So brethren, we're not home yet. But thank God, if we keep in the race, no matter what phase of it may be in, by God's grace, we'll receive the well done. And I tell you, that will be worth it all.